Jairata Madhava Kunjabihari. Jairata Madhava Kunjabihari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parajakacharya Stotra Stotra Sri Srimad Hisavangas Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parajakacharya Stotra Stotra Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki. Sri Mad Bhagavatam Ki. Nitai Gora Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 13, Texts 6 and 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ityutsarja Sandeham Nimir Adhyatma Kovida Mitra Varunayor Jagye Urvasyam Prapitamaha Ityutsarja Sandeham Nimir Adhyatma Kovida Mitra Varunayor Jagne Urvasyam Prapitamaha Ityutsa Sarjasvam Deham Nimir Adhyatma Kovida Mitra Varunayor Jajne Urvasyam Prapitamaha. Please chant. Ityutsarja Svam Deham Nimir Adhyatma Kovidaha. Papitamaha Tiyutsarjasvam Deham Nirnadhyatma Kovidaha Mitra Varunayor Jajne Urvasyam Papitamaha. Iti, thus, Utsasarja gave up Svam, his own, Deham, body, Nimir, Maharaj Nimi, Adhyatma Kovidaha, fully conversant with spiritual knowledge. Mitra Varunayo, from the semen of Mitra and Varuna, discharged from seeing the beauty of Urvashi. Jagne was born, Urvasyam, through Urvasi, a prostitute of the heavenly kingdom. Papitamaha Vashishta, who is known as the great grandfather. Translation purport: His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. After saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Vashishta, the great grandfather, gave up his body also, but through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna, when they saw Urvashi, he was born again. Purport: Mitra and Varuna chanced to meet Urvashi, the most beautiful prostitute of the heavenly kingdom, and they became lusty. Because they were great saints, they tried to control their lust, but they could not do so, and thus they discharged semen. This semen was kept carefully in a water pot, and Vashishta was born from it. I'll read the text 7 as well. And go back to purport. Ganda fat vastu sutad deham nithaya munisattamaha samapte sattayagecha devan uchu samagatan. During the performance of the yajna, the body relinquished by Maharaj Dhimi was preserved in fragrant substances, and at the end of the Satra Yaga, the great saints and brahmanas made the following request to all the demigods assembled there. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvata Deve Gauravani Prachayane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashita Desha Tarine Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Welcome to the morning Bhagavatam class. Thank you for coming. Please tolerate my inefficiency in giving a good Bhagavatam class. Hopefully I can say something of value and try to have the Bhagavatam speak through me a little bit. This is kind of an interesting verse to speak about. It's kind of some far-out things going on here. First, yesterday, Nityananda Pran Prabhu spoke about how we should never imitate what was done by Maharaj Nimi. He cursed his own spiritual master. And he charged his spiritual master with being greedy, and that's why Vasishta went to perform the yajna for King Indra rather than performing his yajna on the earthly planet. And so Maharaj Nimi went ahead with his yajna because it would have been a long time, because Vasishta was going to the heavenly planets, which is on a different time zone. This ended up with a curse and a counter curse, and both of them left their body. And now this verse, text 6, is speaking about Vasishta taking his birth again through the semen of Mitra and Varuna, who couldn't control themselves when they saw Urvashi, who is described in the purport as the most beautiful prostitute of the heavenly kingdom. So I guess they kept the semen carefully in a water pot for some reason. It must be because they're great sages, that they're, what comes from them is very powerful, very potent. So I'm assuming that they knew that a great personality can be born through them. So they didn't want to waste it. So they held on to it in a water pot. So that's a pretty far out subject matter, not something you tell a new person in Krishna consciousness very beginning. But this is going on in the Bhagavatam. So I was looking up in the Bhagavatam. I just searched like Urvasi in the Bhagavatam, and I guess this happens quite often in the Bhagavatam, where Urvasi is somehow going around, and some saints or rishis can't control their senses around her. There's like several different instances in different cantos where like she kind of disturbs the minds and senses of these great saints. So I wanted to speak a little bit from my level of understanding, not really commenting too much on so much this, but I just wanted to speak about sense control and mind control, kind of bring it down a notch from this like kind of far out story. But one thing that I was meditating on is the great fortune that we have to be in the earthly planets, because we hear in the heavenly planets there's so much sense enjoyment, that there's so much beauty and there's so much time and so much luxury that it's very difficult to make advancement in spiritual life. And I was just thinking, there's a verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam speaking about the glory of Kali Yuga. So I oftentimes meditate on this verse for inspiration when things seem really bad. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam that in the purport Prabhupada says that Kali Yuga is the best age because it's the best age for spiritual advancement. because it's so degraded in this age, and because Lord Chaitanya manifests in Kali Yuga, it's actually the best age to go back to Godhead the quickest. And it's really nice that it's so degraded, because it because we don't have these heavenly damsels walking around to distract us. We can't even imagine the beauty of the heavenly planets. And Kali Yuga is so, the situation is so disturbed that it provides for a great opportunity to want to get out of the material world. And there's especially as of even just the last like 10 years or so, even before that, but that's just my experience, that it's becoming worse and worse, the condition. And there's really very little security and very little enjoyment anywhere you go in the world. Basically, everyone's either working really hard for these corporations, or people are like homeless on the street. There's really not like a place so much that you can just go and just enjoy in the world. Maybe you can go out to Hawaii for a little bit and have some fun there. But even there, there's a lot of struggle for existence. And when I was in Hawaii, there's like the main island is really like civilized. So, and like a lot of the locals, they don't like white people, because the white people, Americans, came into Hawaii and took over the land and made it an army base. And the local natives of Hawaii really don't like white people at all. So you don't want to find yourself in a like a local village in Hawaii. So even on these heavenly regions, there's so much quarrel and difficulty. So this provides for a perfect opportunity to go back to Godhead very quickly, because we don't have so much sense enjoyment available. There's not so much happiness going on. And then we have the Sankirtan mission and the Holy Name and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not as difficult to for this, at least just for this one life, for this short time. Also, we don't live for very long in Kali Yuga. So we don't have very much time, and it's easy to see that death is coming soon. So it's easy to take more shelter of the Holy Name, and easier to take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in this short life. If we can just spend this little glimpse of a lifetime reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting, It will make so much advancement in such a short time, and this is really the gift that's going on in Kali Yuga. So in that verse, it's 11:5:36. It says, like, those who are actually intelligent worship the age of Kali, because in the age of Kali, one can achieve all perfection simply by the Sankirtan Yajna. So this age of Kali is actually the best age for spiritual advancement. It's like a whole paradigm shift, because it seems like the worst age. Nothing seems good about it at all. And that's the point. That's why it's so good for spiritual advancement, because it's terrible. You know, it's short-lived, everyone's confused and quarreling. The ecology of the planet is like being destroyed by the mass of people. It's really a terrible situation, and that makes it great for spiritual advancement. Reminds me of the verses of the prayers of Queen Kunti, when she's asking Krishna to bring her difficulties, because when there's difficulties, reminds her of Krishna. So all these difficulties that are going on give us a good reason to take shelter of Krishna. That's one of the main points I was thinking about. I was thinking about how also in this age of Kali, and what Prabhupada has given us by establishing the institution and these temples, he's given us a way to engage our mind and senses in the service of the Lord. This is really the only way to control the senses in the mind, is to engage the senses in spiritual activity and engage the mind in spiritual activity. Prabhupada established this movement based on the teachings of the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So everything that we do is a way to completely absorb our mind and intelligence in the service of Krishna. And that's the purpose of sadhana bhakti, is somehow or other fix the mind on Krishna. The essence of all rules is to always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So I oftentimes think of the temples that Prabhupada established as like a Disneyland for sadhana bhakti. If you don't want to perform sadhana bhakti, there's nothing to do here. You get bored. But if you do want to perform sadhana bhakti, everything is here in the temple. We have such an amazing facility to perform sadhana bhakti. I was looking over the Nectar of Devotion. It said one of the things, one of the activities of devotional life, the chapter is called Principles of Devotional Service. It's like a list of all these different things that you can do in devotional service, and one of them is like dancing before the deity. So we do that like every day, but this is a key principle in engaging our senses in the service of the Lord. And it's described that when you're clapping and you're dancing in front of the deities, it said that the birds of your sinful reactions are flying away as you clap in front of the deities, as you sing in front of the deities. So we get to sing, we get to see the deities with our eyes, we get to clap and dance. Our whole body, when we're dancing, is being purified, because it's being engaged in the service of Krishna. We get to eat the remnants offered to the deity, so our tongue is being purified. And we get to drink the Charanamrita that bathes the deities. So all of these things purify our senses, because they're directly engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness based around deity worship. That's the big thing of sadhana bhakti is in the beginning, is basing your life around deity worship. And then everything kind of stems from that as your practice, always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. What else was there in the Nectar of Devotion? Oh yeah, you can worship trees like Tulsi. And it says also the banyan tree. But we worship Tulsi. And that's like a pretty fun thing to do, to engage your senses. If you get a chance to serve Tulsi, watering her or removing the bugs from that are attacking her, rinsing her with water, all these things, it's really extremely purifying for your consciousness. And like in our Tulsi room, we have kirtan going on all the time, and it's really hot in there because there's lights for Tulsi. So when you go in there and you take care of Tulsi, there's usually it's Ayindra's Prabhu's kirtan going on. So you just serve Tulsi in there for like a half an hour to an hour, and then your consciousness is like totally in Vrindavan. It's like because it's hot, Tulsi's there, holy name is there, Ayindra Prabhu's there. So the whole consciousness is just absorbed. Your mind, your senses, your intelligence are all absorbed in a different frequency than the material platform. So this is our great fortune that we have to engage our complete being in this service of the temple and the deities, and Kishore Kishori, all the services that are available. It's basically the best benediction in the entire universe and in the entire day of Brahma. Right now, basically, Krishna comes every day, Lord Brahma. And then after Krishna leaves, things become covered up for a while, and then Lord Chaitanya comes, and he cracks open the storehouse of love for Krishna. And then also after Lord Chaitanya left, it got covered up for a while. And then Prabhupada came and opened it up again, spread it, and made it available. And so this is the gift that we've received, is this short 10,000 years that we get. The planet stays totally a mess, but we have the opportunity to go to the highest platform, Goloka Vrindavan. And we don't have as many distractions, like I was saying, of the heavenly planets. So this is the great benediction, the gift that we're receiving. Also, so there's a set of verses describing this lust in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's kind of really relevant to this topic of engaging in spiritual life, spiritual activities, and so we can overcome this lust that these great sages were having trouble controlling, but we have the opportunity to control it. So I'm going to read some of those verses about the lust. The first verse is Bhagavad Gita 3:36. Arjuna says, "O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force?" So this is like what's going on in this verse is they're engaging by force they're losing their semen. They're trying to control it, but they aren't able to. And so this question by Arjuna has a lot to do with this verse, and also has a lot to do with our lives in the material world, because when we have this contamination, we're forced to act in sinful ways unwillingly, as if by force. Krishna answers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So all these opportunity to serve and to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, to read Prabhupada's books, is an opportunity to to sharpen our spiritual intelligence. So we know what's actually beneficial for ourselves, so we don't chase after the temporary sources of misery, like the very fleeting sense enjoyment. We develop this really sharp spiritual intelligence by studying Prabhupada's books and serving the spiritual master and the mission of the spiritual master very humbly and patiently. And we develop this strong sense of what's actually beneficial for ourselves, and that's spiritual intelligence. We can see that if we put our energy and our focus into seeking out temporary enjoyment, it really brings only suffering in the long run. And with spiritual intelligence, we can see that there's something greater than this. So instead of just blindly chasing sense enjoyment, we can take on a little bit of austerity and practice Krishna consciousness, and we can maintain it if we have good intelligence. If we have good intelligence and if we sharpen our spiritual intelligence, then we can keep going with it and not become fooled again by the material energy. I was speaking on Monday about patience, so that also comes into play with conquering lust too. We have to be in it for the long run, and even when things don't seem so good, we have to be patient. And I think that's a big aspect of spiritual intelligence is having patience and withstanding some difficult times, and sticking with the process of sadhana bhakti, so we can develop stronger spiritual intelligence and stay on the path of Krishna consciousness. Speaking from my own experience, there's no way I could control my mind and senses on my own. Power, I was trying to give up bad habits before I came to Krishna consciousness, but basically complete failure without the power of Krishna consciousness. And then when I moved into the temple, I just like, there's so many activities to do. There's so much going on. And even more so, the more you get into it, the more service you get, the busier you become, and the more it just like encompasses your life, that there's no time to do anything else. It just completely takes over, and then you're under the control of devotional service and the instructions of the spiritual master. And if we can stick with that, that staying in that fire, that when it's even when it's difficult, you just stick with it. It just sharpens our intelligence and makes us strong and resistant to the material affection, material attraction. So that's from my experience, especially since I've been serving for the last year. When I came back from India, I've been kind of given more responsibility and more service directly with developing the Brahmacharya Ashram. So that's really motivates me. It's like an all-encompassing service. It's my whole life. So everything becomes one-pointed if you have a good, solid instruction by your spiritual master, and you know exactly what to do. You can just execute that, and that's really the best way to control the mind and senses and engage in Krishna consciousness. You have a very specific instruction, and you follow it completely with one-pointed intelligence. you don't get as distracted. There's not so much opportunity to fall down if you're just so busy serving all the time. That's the mercy that we've been given through Srila Prabhupada. So those are pretty much the thoughts that I have. If anyone wants to add to ask questions.
Maybe I'll ask two questions if you'll allow, since nobody else is gonna ask. Thanks for your class and for preparing well for it. Please forgive me if I haven't organized my thoughts. Krishna has empowered me with great speaking, so I have to write my notes down even then. So when we hear this, this is a verse that Hare Krishna, can you hear me? This is a verse that's kind of shocking, that when you hear a Bhagavatam class or any spiritual discourse, it's not the one of the things you expect to hear, that's for sure. But the reality is that people do leave Krishna consciousness, and of course we hear that if you stop your Krishna consciousness this life, then you could continue in the last life. But my comments and questions kind of going towards the direction of how to maintain one's Krishna consciousness in this life. And it seems that one of the things that destroys our Krishna consciousness is lust, but more than lust, shame. Because, you know, the great saints are always merciful. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I'll just appreciate two pastimes that's related to this one, that's similar to this one. Is that Narada Muni, he was a great saint, celibate, traveling all over the universe. But the tendency is that he wasn't... The tendency is that we do have some previous fault. We don't want to tell anybody because it'll cause us shame. We think it'll bring us dishonor. But the reason I appreciate Narada Muni is that at the end of the seventh canto, I think he's describing to Prahlad that even though I'm a great saint now, he doesn't say that I'm a celibate monk. But in my previous life, before I was the Sudra, I was a Gandharva in the heavenly palace. Upa Baharna was his name, I believe. And he was just attached to women like all the rest of us. But he wasn't ashamed to admit it. He didn't tell Vyasadeva to edit that out the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's usually our case when we approach people. We don't want to admit some of our faults. It's not necessary to admit details, but sometimes we put on the facade of perfection. Also, Lord Shiva, even a kind of more embarrassing pastime when he saw Mohini Murti form. He discharged demon right on the spot. He couldn't control himself. His wife was standing right there, Parvati, and he still couldn't control himself. And he never told Vyasadeva to edit this out the Bhagavatam. I don't want my shame, but they were still glorified. So my question is that if I had a question, is that there's two extremes usually, is that we develop shame, and sometimes people leave Krishna consciousness, oh, if I have some, you know, fault like that, which... And also there is another stream that's even more dangerous to that, is that I'll give a couple of passes, and when someone is celibate, they automatically think my words are authoritative. And there's a pastime, a couple of pastimes, Durvasa Muni, he was a renunciate, Sobari Muni, they were renunciates. And although they were celibate, they were still married to Maya, their false ego. Why? Because they wanted to kill Ambarish, Maharaj, Durvasa, or Sobari Muni wanted to kill Garuda because Garuda was eating fish. And although they were celibate, they were also going to be murderers. So what's the point of the celibacy? So how does one give up the pride that, you know, because somehow or other I control my senses, we forget by Krishna's mercy. Like you were mentioning, I can't control my senses without Krishna consciousness, the mercy of Guru, Sadhu. And also to not leave Krishna consciousness because of shame, or I shouldn't speak, because sometimes people feel like, oh, your words are not authoritative as mine, and that's how quarrel goes on. And maybe you could explain a little bit about your realizations of those two extremes, maybe, if you like, if you could understand my gibber and jabber.
One thing about the pride that comes from celibacy. I was just hearing from a devotee to, as you make advancement, you take on position of leadership, to always maintain some menial service, some like physical service, to counteract the dangers of taking on positions of giving class and leadership in position in the management of temple or anything like that. Always, since we're conditioned, we always have the tendency to take advantage of the facilities of the power that we're given and use it in a wrong way because of, we're under the control of the false ego. So one way of counteracting that is to maintain some menial service, some humble menial service, like cleaning or anything. I feel like that's a good idea for anyone, to maintain some humility. I don't completely follow the rest of what you were saying. A shame. Oh, yeah, okay. One thing that I've been hearing about from some devotees is, like, the importance of being honest with yourself and where you're at, and accepting yourself for where you're at. I guess what I've seen is, like, I've seen someone try to do this in the wrong way. Maybe that will help explain, like, if you're going through a difficulty, sometimes people, then they just like go out and tell everybody, like, I'm going through this, and everyone they see, they tell them that. I feel like that's an extreme of being like holding it in to like saying it to everybody, whereas it's more like confidential subject matter. So if you have, like Nityananda Prabhu was saying yesterday, if you just even have one good friend in Krishna consciousness, likely you'll be able to maintain your Krishna consciousness more. So if you just have one person, like either a peer or a senior, to share things with, then that person knows where you're at, and then you can reveal your position to them and your difficulties that you're going through. And when you reveal it to someone, even just one person, then the burden becomes lessened because you shared it with someone. So you're not just dealing with it within. So even just one person, just pick one person and share, develop a relationship. Maybe not like the first thing you do is drop everything on them, but you have to work on developing a strong relationship between a devotee. And if even just one person, you can share everything, like literally everything, everything possible that you can just reveal from within your mind, all the bad things within yourself. You just share it with one person, and then the burden gets taken away. It's like, because it's not just within you. You let it out with somebody, and it makes it easier to deal with, because it's not just an internal problem. You have some help, you have some support. That helps.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your answer. You answered my question, nice. And I'll like to appreciate some points Prabhupada made, a couple points. Is that in his Jaladutta prayers, I think they were called the Jaladutta prayers, in the Science of Civilization, I recorded, when he first came to America, he wrote some prayers that devotees discovered later, right? And so in those prayers, I was just reading those recently, and one point I appreciated in Prabhupada's prayers is that he said, by Krishna's mercy, only will my words become pure. Mm-hmm. Even though he was practicing Krishna consciousness his whole life, he was the sannyasi. It's not like he authorized himself. My prayers, my actions are already pure, I'm a sannyasi. And the reason I appreciate that is because there's a pastime in the self-realization too. He also mentioned, he was debating with one scholar about the word kirtan. And one scholar said, why are your devotees chanting all the time? And Prabhupada says, it says chanting, but then a scholar rebuttal. He's like, kirtan doesn't just mean chanting. My whole point is that Prabhupada gave the example at the end of the letter. He said, there may be two lawyers, a plaintiff and a defendant, and they might be both quoting sastra. But in conclusion, the judge decides what's more relevant according to the time, place, and circumstances. And the reason I appreciate that is because it could be applied to, like I said, the pastimes or Durvasa Muni or Sobari Muni, is that they kind of authorized themselves. They were only lawyers. They said, oh, I'm authoritative. I'm a renunciate. I could judge someone, But in the end, they had no power because they weren't the ultimate judge. So even when they tried to kill, he tried to kill Durvasa Muni, he wasn't the judge. He had no power to kill him. That's because he was only a lawyer. And so that's why I kind of appreciate those points from Prabhupada in these pastimes. So anyway, you could comment, but other than that, I just wanted to make that point. So thank you. Hare Krishna.
I appreciate your enthusiastic participation. Anything else? Okay. All right. Thank you all. Gantaraj Shima Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai, Tagore Premanande, Hari Hari.